Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss. We are currently looking for storytellers for the next Tell Us Something storytelling event. The theme is Lost in Translation. If you'd like to pitch your story for consideration, please call 406-203-4683. You have 3 minutes to leave your pitch. The pitch deadline is August 20th. I look forward to hearing from you soon. I'll call you as soon as I get your pitch. This week on the podcast.
Is that your dog? Fran, being Fran, I said, why? And he said, that dog's been coming down to my shop every day this summer. I'm like, okay, so I'm about to apologize for something. I'm not sure what yet, but... And then he says...
He was like, I'd love to take you fishing at this place that I know, but unfortunately tomorrow I have to go to a wedding, so I can't take you guys. And I jokingly and a little drunkenly was like, oh, we're not good enough to get invited to your wedding?
Don't give it to her like one flower after another, because this is not polite, right? So you just show the plate and she'll take whatever she wants. Okay, mommy, let's go.
And so I go back out, and then I make eye contact with one of the guys, so they definitely see me coming out of the men's side. And then I go to just grab my bag and head on. I'm like, okay, thanks, man. And then it's like, whoa. Hey, do you want a beer or something? And it's like, yeah, sure.
Horror storytellers share their true personal story on the theme Neighbors. Their stories were recorded in person in front of a live audience June 16th, 2003 at Ogren Park at Allegiance Field in Missoula, Montana. We are proud to have partnered with Missoula Pride for this event, which featured 6 queer voices and 2 allies. At the event, I acknowledge that Tell Us Something has a lot of privilege. We welcome all respectful voices, and at this event, we used our privilege to elevate marginalized voices. And if I say that, I must in good faith give up the microphone. So I did. 2 members of the Missoula queer community took over the MC duties for the evening to honor and respect the work that they did. They will follow up each story on today's podcast. Carat Rivera and Devin Carpenter were the MCs that evening. Tell Us Something acknowledges with deep respect and gratitude that we are on the ancestral lands of the Pendele, Salish, and Kootenai peoples who have stewarded this land for countless generations. Their profound connection to the earth and its resources has left an indelible mark on the landscape we now call home. In recognizing their enduring legacy, we are called to be steadfast stewards of this land, nurturing its diversity, preserving its ecosystems, and upholding the principles of environmental sustainability. May we honor the wisdom of our ancestors and embrace our responsibility to protect and preserve this precious land for future generations, fostering a harmonious coexistence with nature that celebrates our shared heritage. We take this moment to honor the land and its native people, and the stories that they share with us. Our first story comes to us from Katie Condon. Katie shares her story about an unlikely neighborly friendship. It's an ode to neighbors, to Fran the dog, and to community. Katie calls her story The Baloney House. Thanks for listening.
I met Fran in January of 2007. She had short, stubby legs, dark brown eyes, the most expressive face, one black fingernail, and this band of black in her hair. It looked like she was always wearing a headband. Long, velvety ears that dragged on the ground when her nose caught a scent. She was the perfect representation of the Basset Hound breed. Which is why I was confused to find her at the pound. She was a year old. She'd been adopted and returned 3 times. And after 14 years with Fran, I considered returning her myself sometimes. Fran was notoriously naughty. You couldn't keep her tied up. I tried once outside of Bernice's bakery, right across the bridge there. She wiggled out of her collar and found her way into the kitchen, and it was like a scene out of a cartoon, like cookie sheets flying and Parker House rolls rolling and my wily hound dog and seven different people chasing after her. I was mortified. Fran made quite a reputation for herself among my community and beyond. So when I got the opportunity to go on a nationwide tour with my band, I knew I needed to find somebody specific to watch Fran. I'd heard through the grapevine that my old friend Leela was looking for some short-term housing. I gave her a call, our dates matched, and she knew Fran well enough, so she took on the challenge. And I left with my band called Letter B. Thank you. I was in this band with my little brother, Jordan Lane, and we just had the best time. From here all the way to Maine, down through the Carolinas, over to LA, up to Seattle, and back home. Over the course of 6 weeks, it was nuts. It was chaos. It was pure joy. A few weeks into the tour, I get a call from Leela, and she says, every day when I leave for work, Fran is inside. And every day when I come home from work, Fran is outside. I think I had just had a gas station hot dog for breakfast. I was probably hungover. My mind was spinning, and I certainly couldn't troubleshoot what my hound dog was doing 1,000 miles away. And I considered at this point in Fran's life, she had been to 8 rainbow gatherings. And I thought, you know, Fran's pretty savvy. If she's home when you get home, I think it's okay. So I get home from tour a few weeks later, and we're having a neighborhood barbecue. And Fran's checking in with me every once in a while. I had to honor the fact that Fran's first priority was her nose, and I just pined to be her second priority. An older gentleman who lived down the road came up to me and he said, "Is that your dog?" Fran, being Fran, I said, "Why?" And he said, "That dog's been coming down to my shop every day this summer." I'm like, okay, so I'm about to apologize for something. I'm not sure what yet, but... And then he says, "I think she likes the cool floors. It's been a hot summer." Yeah, so then I'm like, I gotta defend myself. I gotta keep my house cooler. He doesn't think I could take good enough care of her or something. And then he says, "She doesn't like it when I use the table saw. So I don't use it when she's around." Okay. Then he says, "My wife gives her bologna. I hope that's okay." Yeah, that's fine. And things are starting to come together in my head, and I'm realizing this is where Fran's been going when Leela goes to work and when I was on tour. And then I figured out some things in the house. She was busting into a bedroom. The door would quickly close behind her. And then she would jump up onto a chair, jump up onto a desk, and jump out the window and run down the road to the shop that we lovingly nicknamed the Baloney House. I tried to keep better track of her. I was kind of jealous, and I didn't think it was safe, so I tried to build a fence, and that didn't work, and I bought bologna. That didn't work. I got to know the folks down at the Bologna house because I was consistently going down there retrieving Fran. And sometimes I would walk into the shop and Doug would be fixing something, anything. And some days I'd walk in there and he'd be building a birdhouse. And some days I would walk in there and he would be painting illustrations of birds for the freaking Audubon Society. Like, no wonder Fran loved him. One day, Fran and I are standing at the end of our driveway, and we see Doug's truck coming down the road, this big white pickup truck with a ladder on the back. And he stops, leans over, opens the passenger side door, and Fran runs over, jumps in, and they take off down the road. And I chase after him. Wait a second. And he stops. And I open the door and I get my dog out of the truck. He says, Judy went to McDonald's. She got egg McMuffins. She got Fran one too. That checks out. What am I gonna say, no? And don't come at me with, you shouldn't let your dog eat Egg McMuffins, because that dog had a stomach of steel. It was sewn into place, and we only had to pump it twice in her life. So I'm like, yeah, okay. Enjoy your breakfast with Fran. And Doug gets this, like, mischievous grin on his old man face. And he looks over at my dog and he says, let's go, Franny. And he takes off and Fran's chasing his truck down the road. Those little legs are going, those ears are flapping. It's her version of a sprint. And I'm standing there literally in their dust and I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated and I'm also filled with joy. And I'm frustrated because this is not something that I was expecting to happen. This isn't what normally happens. I've been spending Fran's entire life protecting her from neighbors or protecting neighbors from her. And this situation was something I didn't understand, and that made me feel frustrated. And the joy was seeing Doug become a child and my old hound dog become a puppy. And when they raced down the road, I thought, this is a dog's life. This is loyalty and compassion and playfulness. These are the values that I revere as a dog owner. And then I realized, these are the values of great neighbors. Doug and Judy are here today. And I just want to thank you guys for being so kind to Fran, to me, and to my family. I learned many lessons from Fran over the years, but I'll leave you with this one tonight. Love thy neighbor, especially if they have baloney.
Katie Condon. Katie is a humanitarian at heart. She believes in the connection of all things. Katie is a lover of art and the simple beauty this life has to offer.
Our next story comes to us from Reed Reimers. Reed is recognized for his Montana accent during a trip to Vietnam and is then invited to a neighborhood family wedding. Reed calls the story, Crashing a Wedding in Vietnam. Thanks for listening.
Yes, as mentioned, I do love to travel. I became obsessed after a six-week trip to New Zealand turned into almost a year. I'd lived in a van. I was an illegal transient worker on a vineyard. I ended up with white boy dreadlocks because when I had hair, it was quite curly. Not culturally appropriative, I just want to be clear. But my favorite time to travel is actually during February. February in Missoula in particular always feels like a wake to me. Everybody walks around and just kind of nods at each other like, yeah, we're all going through it, man. We're all here. That little half wry smile at the grocery store is just horribly depressing. And so two very good friends of mine, Craig and Leah, decided years ago to start what we lovingly and very appropriately call Fuck You February. And so we try to travel for a couple months, leaving mid-January, getting back mid-March, and we've been all over the place. And one of those luscious Fuck You February trips took us to northern Vietnam. We arrived in Hanoi at dawn-ish, and I'm sure any of you that have traveled from Montana to somewhere like that, when you step off the plane, it's the thickness of the air. It's not just the humidity, it's not a temperature thing, it's the fact that you're near sea level and the air is full of oxygen. So even though you've traveled nightmarishly long to get there, there's something invigorating about it. And that's what we found as we stepped off the plane in Hanoi early that morning. We knew it would be a dangerous mistake to try to sleep even though we were exhausted. And so we decided to stay up, get into the cycle of time, and ran around Hanoi, which is a beautiful city built by French colonialists and now lived in by proper Vietnamese people. The wide boulevards meant to be strut along and see and be seen became shops and restaurants, and you walk in the damn street because you'll figure it out. It's fine. It all works for them, and I really loved being there. At the end of our first night as we got there, we had asked around, like, what should we do? We want to go get a little rowdy. We need to get a little messed up so we can get some sleep and start this cycle appropriately. And the answer from everyone was Be Ahoy, the Be Ahoy corner. Be Ahoy is a low-octane, quick-brewed beer that doesn't have a long shelf life, so you kind of have to just chug it down. Because of its quick process, it's also quite affordable. So a single cup of Be Ahoy was about 20 U.S. cents, and you could buy an entire pitcher for a dollar. She knows, you know, yeah. And Be Ahoy Corner, again, this beautiful, built in the beautiful French style where three different streets come together, is just a miasma of tiny plastic chairs and plastic stools and a bunch of people getting really sloppy on very, very cheap beer. There was obviously a language barrier. I knew my please, thank yous, and excuse me's in Vietnamese, but that's about it. But the lovely social lubricant that is alcohol instantly made us a ton of friends, and the fact we didn't mind dropping $1.50 to buy a pitcher for the table next to us. So soon we were surrounded by all sorts of lovely folks, some students trying to practice their English, some locals that we couldn't talk to at all, but as a teacher of mime, I'm really good, especially after a few beers, about explaining what I'm doing with frantic, throbbing hand gestures. There may have been a couple beers spilled, but it worked out just fine. And as we were sitting there, though, this tall white man, one of the only tall white boys we see, whenever we travel, we're like, tall white guy. We point him out, because they're not as common as you might think in a lot of places. This guy comes up to us, and he's like, asked me the weirdest question I'd ever imagined. He was like, excuse me, are you from Montana? And we were like, yeah. And he was like, I grew up in Bozeman. Apparently, the fact that we had dove in with both feet and were just chatting and gabbing with people openly had first caught his attention. Then he heard our accent and he was like, that's definitely Western, but Northern Western. We do say bag, you know? Like, he caught it all. And then my buddy, actually, I figured out later, had a, he runs a fly fishing shop in Divide and he was wearing his hat. So the guy was like, there he goes. This lovely guy from Bozeman said, we sat and had a couple drinks. He was like, hey, you got to meet my friend Ty. Ty was a local guy. He ran motorcycle tours up around the northern part of Vietnam. It was just an absolute treat. And so he was like, you got to meet Ty. Come on over. And after that much Be Ahoy, things are a little fuzzy at this point. You'll start going to see a pattern about this whole story. Things get a little fuzzy after a while. But we went to Ty's place. He was a consummate host. His English wasn't super strong, but he was super excited to practice it. And that made us excited as well. And we're sitting there, and my friends are talking about fishing because they're fly fishing guides, and that's all they talk about 90% of the time. And He was like, I'd love to take you fishing at this place that I know, but unfortunately tomorrow I have to go to a wedding, so I can't take you guys. And I jokingly and a little drunkenly was like, oh, we're not good enough to get invited to your wedding? The entire mood shifts. He stops everything, stares at me, and he's like, would you go? You have to tell me now. If you want to go, you can go, but you have to tell me now, and you have to promise to go. And we look at each other after this crazy night. We hadn't even been there for that, in the country for less than a day. And we're like, I think, yeah, right? You don't get that kind of invite every day. And so the next morning at 6:30 a.m., found us dressed in our finest clothes. My buddy Craig is a Patagucci boy. So he had his fishing shirt and his fishing pants, kind of nice. I'm not. So I had this scrubby, like, sun shirt I brought along and, like, cargo pants. Listen, I still support cargo shorts, but we all know cargo pants. And Leah, of course, that lucky duck, had one of those tube dresses that can be like a hat or can be a scarf, or she can just pull it over her luscious little blonde body and look absolutely fabulous, wrinkle-free. And I was like, you bitch. So we're standing out there on the sidewalk. Ty pulls up with his wife and his lovely little kiddo, and we hop in a car and head out to this wedding. And again, as we travel through, you kind of see the old colonial built, the French colonial built Hanoi, slowly kind of break down into humbler structures, kind of hand-built cinder blocks and corrugated metal that eventually gives way to just emptiness of rice paddies. It was during a winter planting there, I assume. So there was kind of green about, but it's mostly just kind of marshes as you're driving down the road. About an hour later, we take a random right turn onto an elevated road through the paddies, heading toward this elevated part of land that had some houses and some trees poking up, just kind of rising above all of the paddies. And as we pull up, Ty, in his best broken English, described that Vietnamese weddings last for 6 days sometimes. And we were there on day four. The groom's family and the bride's family have still not gotten together, so it's just been the groom's family for 3 days straight. And they are bored as all hell. So we pull up to this much larger house than I expected. It's a multi-generational house, probably 15 to 20 people lived there. Big house, all white tile on the inside and the outside. And we go in, and Ty explains that as special guests, it was expected that we would take a shot of their kind of family-made rice whiskey with the patriarch of the family. Great, I don't turn down shots, even though it's like 9:30 in the morning, I don't mind. What we didn't quite realize was that at a wedding, especially on the groom's side, every male over the age of 25 considers himself a patriarch of the family. So instead of taking one shot with everybody, we end up having a line of over 20 people waiting to come individually take shots with us as a welcome to their place. Now, Ty's wife was pouring for us, and they happened to store their homemade hooch in reused plastic bottles. And so she was usually giving us a shot, but every so often she was sneaking in water on ours. Because I don't know if you've ever taken 20 shots of homemade hooch before 10 a.m. on a head full of jet lag and general cultural confusion. Listen, I can handle myself, but that was a lot. And from then on, I started being kind of nervous. I was like, oh no, I'm gonna be a sloppy jalopy up here. Like, I don't wanna break any cultural norms. I don't even know what the hell we're supposed to do here. Everyone there was so excited and so inviting though, and they ended up getting shit canned right along with us to the point that it just didn't matter. And from that moment, after our 20 pre-10 a.m. shots, everything again gets a little loopy jaloopy. But I do remember we snuck out with some of the kids to the pomelo grove next door and we're stealing pomelos. They're like big grapefruits. The lady came out screaming at us, and then she saw that there was like three random white people in her yard. It was like, oh, you must be here for the wedding. She gave us a crate of pomelos to take back. There was some really loud, terrible karaoke going on. I sang Obladi Oblada, which they didn't recognize at all, but they found quite impressive. There was huge trays of food that came out. My buddy Craig is allergic to peanuts, and usually he can kind of smell it and he's okay, but he bit into a bun and instantly stopped, set it down and ran outside to go spit it out. He brought a whole jug of whiskey with him to rinse his mouth with. Well, little did he realize as he looked up when he was done, he was right outside where all the grandmas had been preparing all the food. And he was there, like, seemingly puking it up out of a nightmare. We got that explained. It was fine, but it was very, very awkward. At one point, Ty had brought his dad's guitar, which hadn't been played since the Vietnam War, because none of his family knew how to play. Craig knew how to pick a few things. And so they invited us up to sing a song. And I was like, Craig, what songs do you know? He's like, not many. He's like, what songs do you know? I was like, nothing you can play. So we decided on Wagon Wheel, which I knew almost none of the lyrics to. And I turned to him and I was like, man, I don't know the verse. I know the chorus. Everybody knows the chorus. I don't know the verses. And he was like, they don't speak English. Nobody cares. So it turned into kind of like a heading down south to the watermelon place. And we're going in to grab something for a face to say, hey, Rama wreck me. Entire family gets so excited. At some point, we need to go out to this temple that's nearby. They were preparing for the Lunar New Year. And so we hop on scooters. Craig jumps on a scooter, guns it, instantly shoots out from under him, and goes off the edge of the cliff into the rice paddies, which was only met by like, oh, stupid drunk guy, ha, 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 ha. It was fine. They knew how to do it. They totally back up. I hop on one, and let me tell you, as a big awkward asshole, I am much better on four wheels than two. I did pretty well, but as I came around the corner, I skidded out, again, to just cheers and guffaws from everyone. And I was assigned a driver, which was a nine-year-old girl, who was quite capable about running a damn 50cc scooter without any kind of issues. So the story continued. It was an amazing day. We finally got back into Hanoi. We met up with the families there. And after the bride was hiding somewhere and the groom had to go find him in the family's house, find her in the family's house and take her down, we had a great party. We kind of ended at a fast food chicken joint. And we were walking back. But what hit me as we were walking back home and sobriety started to rear its ugly, nasty head, I just thought so many times when I travel, I feel like an outsider looking in. I feel like a voyeur in some ways. As much as you can be invited into a place, you always feel like you're outside of it. And what I realized is that those folks were just as excited to have us there to get their fourth day celebration going as we felt to be there. And I just think that that touched me in a way I actually have trouble putting words to, which I probably should have prepared for because I'm telling you all about it. But I just love, though, as a final thought, that somewhere above someone's mantle is a beautiful, professionally taken photo. All the bride and groom's family and friends dressed in their finest, and randomly in the back is two scuzzy backpackers and a gorgeous blonde girl in a goddamn wrap dress. Thank you.
Reed was born and raised in Missoula and has a master's in theater from the University of Montana. You've probably seen him hosting numerous events around town, running trivia nights, or strutting his stuff on the stage in local theater productions, including Rocky Horror Live. He has a deep love for other cultures and climes, which has taken him to almost 50 different countries. Because he travels on a tight budget, he has to get creative on those trips, which often leads to unexpected adventures. He also teaches theater to local kiddos, tends to his plethora of houseplants, and recently became a puppy papa to an adorable sociopath named Dewey.
Coming up.
Don't give it to her like one flower after another, because this is not polite, right? So you just show the plate and she'll take whatever she wants. Okay, mommy, let's go.
And so I go back out and then I make eye contact with one of the guys, so they definitely see me coming out of the men's side. And then I go to just grab my bag and head on. I'm like, okay, thanks, man. And then it's like, whoa. Hey, do you want a beer or something? And it's like, yeah, sure.
Those stories after a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. Thank you to our stewardship sponsor, University of Montana Summer Office. Thank you to our story sponsors, Axis Physical Therapy and Hindu Hillbilly. Thank you to our accessibility sponsor, Blackfoot Communications. Our next storyteller is Pascaline Picard. Pascaline takes the long way on a hike to harvest black locust flowers to fry in dough and make delicious donuts. A grateful neighbor unexpectedly receives the entire plate when offered. Pascaline calls her story Mom's Survival Plan with Les Beignets de Kasha. Thanks for listening.
Wow, very impressive. Bonsoir. All right, so most of my life I have lived in big houses surrounded with huge gardens, many trees. But once I got divorced, I decided I had to move to a smaller place. So I moved to an apartment with my two sons, Gaspar and Guillaume. And so we settled in this apartment, quite small for us. And in the springtime, we decided that we needed some snack around 4 p.m. That's a snack time in France. Yeah, for you guys, sometimes it's just dinner. For us, it's just snack time, and then we have dinner like at 8. But anyway, so I tell my sons, okay, let's go. You know, in the springtime, you have these trees. In France, we call them acacia, and I think in English, it's a black locust. And it smells beautiful. It's like this stem with like white flowers on it. And it's as big as grape. It smells delicious and it tastes delicious. And when I arrived here by the end of May, I had tasted some on your trees here in Missoula, and so good. So anyway, I tell my son, let's go and let's grab some flowers so that we can make donuts out of them. They love it. And my older son, Gaspar, he said, can we take Elliot, that's his Turkish friend, can we take him? Because I don't think he knows about these donuts. So I say, okay, let's go. So off we go. And I don't know about you, but me living with two boys, at that time they were 7 and 9 years old, always used to be in big houses, big gardens, and they were stuck in my apartment. So they were getting hectic, kind of. So I needed them to do some exercise and to practice, like just go and do some sport. So off we go, and I make sure that actually the walk will be very long. So that then when I need them to go to bed, I'm sure I'll be on my own then. So we go and we walk and we take loops and loops and loops and loops. And the younger one, Guillaume, said, Maman, please, just can we just go straight to the trees? Like we can smell them. Can we just go straight to the point? And then I was like, oh, no, no, that's not good. That's not good. Just one more, two more loops. So we keep walking. We keep walking. And finally, I decide after an hour that maybe time is off. Like we should just get the flowers. But they are small. And the trees, these acacia trees, the black locust trees, they are very, very tall, very thin, very hardwood. So I tell them to climb it, but they have to climb like 15 feet. So I take them and I put them on the tree and they grab the branches and then they pick the flowers and they toss them on my head, of course. And then I pile them on my wicker. It's a big wicker, like very big one. And maybe it takes like 15, 20 minutes, and we have so many of them. So I said, okay, guys, just come down. And I could tell, like, looking at Elliot, my son's friend, looking at his face, he was like watering. You know, just imagine these flowers. If you were a bee, I think that would be the paradise for the bees. Because they smell so good, and you just want to have all of them just for you. So we go back home, 10 minutes the walk back. And we get home, it's about 5:30, 6, something like that. And we start to prepare the dough. And then we dip the flowers, it smells so good. And then once it's fried, we put it on a plate, and as I was piling them up, I could see the plate going bigger, 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 bigger. Because maybe we had like 40 flowers. So it's kind of a lot for just 4 people. And my sons are like, oh, maman, please, can we try one? No, guys, wait for me to finish it, because otherwise, once I'm done with the cooking, there won't be any left for me. I know you. So, yeah, and it's true. I have to help myself first, otherwise I don't eat. So we have these huge plates, and they are so eager to eat. And then I remember, oh, Madame Mani, she's my one floor down neighbor, and she had told me the very morning that her son-in-law had just died. And I could feel that she was very emotional, very sad about this. So before we started eating the flour donuts, I told my sons, okay, guys, you know what? You know, Madame Mani, she just lost her son-in-law. So what about you go down and you give her, like, you offer her the plate and then she can take some. But please don't give it to her like one flower after another, because this is not polite, right? So you just show the plate and she'll take whatever she wants. Okay, mommy, let's go. So the three boys go down one floor and I start cleaning the kitchen. 2 minutes later, not even, they come back. They ring at the door. I open the door and I don't know, like, they look at me and I can feel something is wrong, but I don't know what. And they are half laughing, half crying, like I know that they don't know how they should feel. So I ask them, okay, so where is the plate? Okay, mom. The thing is, we rang at the door and Madame Mani opened the door and we told her that she could have some of the donuts. Yeah, good. And okay, the thing is, she took the plate, put it in the kitchen. She went back to the door and said, thank you guys, you are so lovely. And she closed the door on us. And so I said, but did you say that she could have some? Yes, mom, but what I was supposed to do, like ask her the plate back and just give it two? You told her she could take whatever she wanted, and I guess the 40 donuts was good enough for her. But you know, Madame Mani, she's maybe 85 years old. So I don't know, but 40 donuts, when you're sad, it's a lot, right? Even if you are not sad, actually, but anyway. So I look at my sons, it's 7 p.m., no snack, dinner is coming on, but I have nothing prepared because I was counting on these donuts. And my boys are still expecting to have some donuts. So I guess we have to go back to the forest. And surprisingly, it was just 10 minutes long. So we go back to the forest, but we had already picked all the easier flowers, so we had to go to the further one. So they have to climb again. And at some point I said, you know what, we don't need 41. Like, we don't need 40. Just get maybe 15 to 20, that's fine. So we get the 20 flowers, we go back, we hurry, I make the dough again, I dip the flour again in the dough, and I fry them and we eat them, but we're just so tired, like, it's 8 p.m., man, and is that a dinner? But anyway, we loved it. Elliot loved it. He had never eaten fried flowers before, and you should try. I will give Mark the recipe, so. And still, you know, we have eaten maybe 20 donuts. We were the four of us, and that was a lot. We were like, oh. So we go to bed, still wondering how was Madame Mani doing. Because, you know, she's 85-something, quite fit. She always tells me about her vegetables and the fruits she loves to eat. So I don't see how the donuts and the vegetables fit together, but anyway. And the following morning, I wake up wondering if I had missed the ambulance or just to take care of her, you know. And then suddenly I see her in the staircase going to the market, because it's Saturday morning and I also go to the market. That's usually where we chat. So she sees me and I'm like, oh, bonjour, Madame Mani, with a smile that says more than what I could say. And she's like, oh, Pascaline, thank you so much for the donuts. You know, I just love them. Oh, so she ate all of them. You know, I had my son on the phone and I told him how lucky I was to have you as a neighbor, that you are so thoughtful and they were so good. It was my first time. Thank you so much. Then I realized she had eaten the 40 donuts and she wasn't even sick. So she had a very strong stomach, I guess. And you know what? The thing is, that was 6 years ago and she's still my neighbor. I am still her neighbor and I'm here for 2.5 months and she's taking care of my plants back home. I hope she's not eating them. But now every time I cook something, because I like to give, my building is mainly full of like widows, and so I'm by myself with them. So whenever I cook a cake for my sons, I keep some for them, but then my son always tells me, okay, mom, remember, first you give us some, and you make sure it's just one size, one person size of the cake. Thank you.
Pascaline Picard has been an English teacher in France for 15 years, and she is a Fulbright grantee attending a 5-week program in the US about American history, culture, and politics. She is a lifelong learner, and she loves discovering new things, meeting people, and sharing experiences. Her adventurous spirit and curiosity have brought her to various places such as Jordan, Thailand, China, Italy, the UK, and Ireland.
Rounding out this episode of the Tell Us Something podcast, Keegan Bonstein, a short king, makes friends with a native Hawaiian family on the beach and feels safe and comfortable in his skin. Keegan calls his story Short King, or Out of the Head and Into the Heart. Thanks for listening.
Out of the head and into the heart. I've been in transition for about a year now. Been on hormones for the last 6 months, and it has been a very revelatory experience. Thank you. Just a lot of things coming up, and it becomes something where you just have time to look at all the things that you want to braid together about this part that hasn't been expressed. And one of the things I was thinking about is the short king. Like, I want to be a short king, which is somebody of short stature that exudes confidence. I'm like, all right, that's aspirational. Let's go for that. And so while I'm going through this process, I'm realizing, you know, I haven't been out of town. Like, it had been since COVID, I hadn't left or anything like that. So I'm like, I need something to like break up the rhythm a little bit and shake up the gumball machine. And my friend, like about a year ago, was like, why don't you go to Hawaii? And I was like, okay, I mean, you know, there's so many places to go. And then I just kind of put that away. And then it starts showing up on people's T-shirts and it's coming up in conversation. I'm like, all right, universe, I hear you. And so I book a ticket and go off to Honolulu and land in Oahu. And I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but when you land there, at least to me, the land is so vocal. You can feel it. And so I immediately went up to the north shore of Oahu, which is like the center of surf culture. And it was at the end of the surf season. It was mid-April. And so there's a lot of people there doing that. And I'm just kind of taking things in. And I end up in this little area called Pupukea. And in Pupukea is a beach called Three Tables. And it was awesome. It was this tiny little beach with two alcoves, one on either side. And one side has sand on it with some trees in the background. And then it slowly turns into like coral drop off and like cliffside. And so I spent some time there, and like, that's where I ended up spending most of my time. I thought I was gonna island hop and everything, but I wound up staying put. And as soon as I get there, there's, at Three Tables, why it's called that, there's three stone slats out a little bit of ways. And I'm just watching the waves crash, and I'm just like, fuck it. And I dive in, and I'm swimming in this ocean, and I start laughing hysterically. And I'm just diving in and feeling this visceral give and take of the tide. And I grew up in on the Atlantic Ocean, and this was a whole other thing. Like, it's very vocal and wild and very clear that this is the biggest ocean on our planet. And when I was out there having this experience, I was like, I don't want to rehearse anymore. I just want to dive in and get going and make each day matter more than I felt I had been at that point. So I stayed in Pupukea. I made some really great friends, jumped off some rocks, and just had an awesome experience staying at a hostel. And then I had prepared to camp there because I brought my tent with me and everything. And so at the end of my time staying at a hostel, a friend of mine, we had gone on this hike and had this very open-hearted conversation, and I was really proud of myself that I had said how I felt. And he drops me off at the other side of Three Tables, which there's a bridge, and then there are these stationary bathrooms there. And he went off to meet another friend. So I have my pack on me, and I see this Hawaiian family, and they've clearly been there for a little while. There was like a tarp cover with a grill, a couple blankets, a lot of folding chairs. And I was kind of like, all right, I'll ask these people while I use the restroom to watch my bag. I didn't really want to bring it in the bathroom. It was huge. So, and I was also, you know, kind of calling their bluff, like, people aren't that nice. I don't know. It was a test. And I went up to them, and these two guys were sitting on the side in folding chairs, and I go up to them and I say, excuse me, would you mind watching my bag while I use the restroom? And they go, oh yeah, sure, no problem. And I go in and I use the men's side. And while I'm in the bathroom, I'm like, all right, you know, just play it cool. If anything happens, just play it cool. Because like, being trans, in my experience, you learn to assess things very quickly, and you got to figure out how to keep yourself safe. And so I go back out, and then I make eye contact with one of the guys, so they definitely see me coming out of the men's side. And then I go to just grab my bag and head on. I'm like, okay, thanks, man. And then it's like, whoa. Hey, do you want a beer or something? And I was like, yeah, sure, thanks. And he's like, yeah, no problem. What's your name? And so in an act of good faith, I introduced myself by my nickname. Hey, I'm Finn. He's like, hey, nice to meet you. I'm Uncle. This is Stan. And I was like, all right. So making a little bit of chit chat, not too much. And I just slowly start to realize they're like inviting me to sit down and enjoy for a while. So I sit down and I'm sitting down next to them while they're in the chairs, and they're just feeding me beautiful, perfect poke, beer, the biggest blunt I've ever seen. It, you know, I handled myself like a boss, but like, you know, it was something. Somewhere out there, Snoop's proud. So, and I'm hanging there and they're just like letting me be and like making a little bit of talk, but everything's happening, you know, like the teenagers are giving flack to the young adults, and like I'm watching Uncle help one of the aunties out with her chair that's not working. Oh, hold on, I'll be right there. Let me help you. And like, they're just lovely hosts. And up walks this guy, and he's like, hey, I'm Brendan. Hey, Brendan, nice to meet you. He's not much taller than me, and he holds himself with pride. Yeah. And we're just having this conversation, and he's just gently, but like with some authority, advising me on how to get my shit together. And he's telling me about like all these certificates I can earn and just perspective changes, and it was a really awesome, generous gesture. And at one point, I look off to the side where the sand is in Three Tables, and I see like people on the beach, like surfers going in and out with the tide, people swimming. And on the radio comes One Love. One love, one life, and the waves are perfectly in sync. Boys thinking about life. Yeah. And I realized that these people created space for me to create space for myself. They made it safe to be here now, in this moment. Yeah. And I'm just totally blown away by the generosity. And we all sit there and just slowly watch the sunset quietly, music's playing. And as I start to realize it's time to wrap up, I start to get my bag, and then I walk over to the cliffside at the coral edge where there's a bunch of trees. And so the drop-off's right there. Two trees are crossed right over my head, and right in the middle is the moon. It's a full moon. And I'm just holding my hands there and saying thank you to something I didn't even know I needed. And as I'm leaving, one of the aunties hands me something. She's like, here, take this. And it was a loaf of bread of King's Hawaiian. And as I'm walking off, I'm like, Uncle, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And he was like, hey, man, I'm with you. Yeah. And at the end of it, they just gave me space to be and showed me that there's a strength in that. That you can be a short king and a good king at that. Thank you.
Keegan Bonstein is a lifelong performer excited to take a hand at storytelling tonight. He has 25 years of performance experience, ranging from musicals to environmental theater to political demonstration. He is also a lifelong food service worker and energy practitioner. He's very grateful to call Missoula home and for this opportunity.
Pretty great stories, right? I'll bet you have a story to share, and I'll bet that you have a story to share on the theme Lost in Translation. The next Tell Us Something Live event is scheduled for September 28th. The theme is Lost in Translation. Pitch your story for consideration by calling 406-203-4683. You have 3 minutes to leave your pitch. The pitch deadline is August 20th. I look forward to hearing from you soon. I'll call you as soon as I get your pitch. Thanks to our media sponsors, Missoula Broadcasting Company, including the family of ESPN Radio, The Trail 103.3, Jack FM, and Missoula's source for modern hits, U104.5, Float Missoula. Learn more at floatmsla.com and missoulaevents.net. Next week, join us for the concluding stories from the Neighbors Live Storytelling Event.
And as I wake up, I notice that there's a woman standing outside my bedroom, tapping on the window, and holding this white bag in the air. And then I get excited because I realize this is not just some woman, this is Mimi, this is my grandma. And what I need to do is go very quietly, let her in the house. And I go let Mimi in the front door. And we sit down and we open up this white bag and we share a couple glazed donut holes. Just the two of us before we go wake up everyone else and then share with them as well.
The best explanation that I have for this is that it's like I was walking down this path and it's nighttime and queerness is like a house with the lights on and I can see the people inside and I want to go in, but I don't know those people and I don't live in that house and the door is closed. And then I met Lewis.
And he's going, I'm sorry. Can I get a ride? And Tracy's like, yeah, get in the car. And I'm like, no. And I like barricade the door and trap him inside. And Tracy's behind me and JP's standing next to me. And I go, JP, call the cops. And JP's like, no, we're not calling the cops.
And we see this hawk coming up the North Ridge. And she's floating on those drafts and just floating and floating. And pretty soon, she's right here. She's right above us. If I had stood on my tiptoes, I could have touched her. Now, I'm not no hoogity-boogity, new age, woo-woo, mystical girl. I'm not. Look at me. Oh, my God. Okay?
Tune in for those stories on the next Tell Us Something podcast. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersband.com. To learn more about Tell Us Something, please visit tellussomething.org.